This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm pleased to have Rob Wenger with me, and he's a person I know for years, and we used to live, both of us, in DC area. Neither of us live there anymore, but our companies are there. Rob, welcome to this podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the company?
Sure. So Rob Wenger, I'm the CEO, co-founder of HireLogic. HireLogic is a company that mostly makes online community software. We do it for associations and a lot of software companies. Also just other corporations, but software companies and associations are our two biggest markets. We also have some marketing automation software that we sell into those markets. We have some management of like standards development, things like that. So a lot of different things. And a little background. So I'm a software developer myself. I have a computer science degree and have been writing software since I was 12. This is HireLogic, I guess, is my third company. I founded a fourth company in between. I retired 6 years ago and moved out to Park City, Utah to just be with nature, and ended up spending maybe 6 months and came back, started another company. And then 5 years after that, a year ago, I came back to HireLogic as CEO again. So it's been a fun ride, but yeah, lots of cool tech involved along the way.
Fantastic. And during the time that, you had at the early stage of HireLogic, you started the company, versus at this phase of the company that you are much bigger company and you have acquired some other companies and folded into, HireLogic, some other technologies at least that you folded into HireLogic. What's your overall kind of message to other founders that probably majority of them by far have not experienced anything like that? That you have been at the early phase, you have been at the middle phase, you raised money, you grow the company, you even made some acquisitions, then you left, now you are back, again. So anything you can share with us, we appreciate.
Sure, yeah. It's been an interesting journey. And, I think when I founded it in 2007, end of 2007, it was just me. And it was writing software. And then a friend of mine joined me. He had some software, so we put it together. We grew it over time, it's maybe 100 people, I think. So it's probably 2016. So 2007, 2016, we just grew it organically with, just bootstrap, our own money, our own time, blood, sweat, and tears, all of that. Yeah. 2016, we brought in a PE partner, JMI Equity. They're out of Baltimore. And they came in and really helped us take it to the next level. We started doing acquisitions in 2017. We did four that year, two in one day. That was a lot of fun. That's a whole story unto itself. So we acquired teams all over. One was in Portland, one was in Phoenix, one was in Bethesda area, which was easier for us, and then one was upstate New York. So in that year, we ended up going from a team of everybody being in D.C. to, five offices spread out a little bit around the country. Then we kind of consolidated all of that. You know, we actually closed the Bethesda office and brought all those people to Arlington, which was easy because it's not that bad. Half of them, I think, lived in Virginia, so we didn't lose people over that, I don't think, or at least not significant numbers. And then, yeah, it was just a matter of, you know, making the technologies work together, making the teams work together. That was fairly challenging, having done it all in 1 year. So we went from 100 people to 360 in that 1 year. So a lot of growth, a lot of growing pains, but I think it worked out pretty well. And then in 2019, I guess, after having done all that work, I decided to retire. So I had been, you know, since I was number one employee, I knew everything. Everything was in my head. I managed probably too deeply into the company than I needed to. And it was a lot of work. And so I was kind of burnt out. So I hired a guy to come in. It was also probably the right time to do it. I hired a CEO to come in to replace me that was more of a financial performance, you know, like setting a process of procedures, all that kind of stuff. So he joined, I think it was September 2019. I officially retired in March of 2020. And if I'm wrong about these dates, my LinkedIn will tell the truth, but it's something like that. And then he did a great job. He did an acquisition of two acquisitions while it's gone. And then it came time, you know, after he sort of optimized everything, you know, got us to 40% EBITDA, and, you know, got the team from what would have been probably, if we kept my 360 added, the people he acquired, it would have been like 470. But when I came back, it was 300. So talking about operational efficiencies, you know, he knocked out a third of the headcount over time, and just made it much, much more efficient. So I came back to a great situation in that regard. And a great team. And, but I came back more for the technology, for the vision. So as much as he was great at, that operationalizing things, I know the industry better. I know the products better. I know technology better. You know, he's a finance guy. I'm a technologist. So, and so it was really kind of AI automation all suddenly became a lot better and easier, and more obvious. And so, I came back to bring those technologies to bear to our industries. So super excited about that. I think the other kind of cool part about that is I came back with having a great COO in place. So she runs most of the business and I just make the technology work. So it's been a much more fitting to how I like to do business and live, I guess.
Fantastic. Yeah, there are so many ways in any business that you can really make it successful, make it work great. Yeah. And it just depends on the DNA of the company, the people that you have, and everything starts with that kind of very good, constructive, positive communication between different parties, and then finding the solution that works best for the customers, for the product, for the company business, of course. That's great. That's great. And then some people I have seen in the software world, especially that software is a very complex by nature, that whenever, you know, you are developing software, there are so many technologies, so many caveats, so many, you know, things that need to work. And it takes time to build a good software. There is no good solution right overnight. You cannot really just change anything drastically. You have to pay attention to legacy system, to supporting the previous version, customers. That makes everything even more complex. Some people believe that, you know, minimizing the changes in any software actually can accelerate the business and sales and marketing rather than really innovating all the time. So sometimes innovation might be it might be counterproductive. But of course, sometimes innovation can be very productive because you are at the age of the company that innovation is required. Mm-hmm. How can you tell, you know, someone that is the right time to innovate or is not the right time to innovate? Just slow down a little bit. You know, that message is especially for you know, founders and CEOs of software companies when to slow down on innovation to get the best result on the business side and when to accelerate the innovation, because it's time. If you don't innovate, you are going to see, you know, downward on the business side.
Yeah, that it is a constant challenge. You're right. I mean, we have this thing we call tech debt, right? Where when you first start your company, hopefully you're using the latest and greatest technologies. But then when you're looking at, you know, a 20 and 30 year horizon, you really can't stick with that, right? One of the companies we acquired, for example, I think when we acquired them, they were 20 years old and they were using Cold Fusion, which was a great product in like the late 90s and early zeros probably. But now, you know, it's tough to maintain, right? Same thing, ASP Classic, one of the companies we did. So you do have to do, I think I would take your question a couple different ways. One, there is the concept that you're eventually sort of done with it and you could, and adding things just kind of annoys clients because it's new things to learn, right? So I'll give an example, maybe not quite that extreme, but like Microsoft Word, right? So I've been using Microsoft Word since, I don't know, 1989 probably, and or earlier. And they've been working on it since then, right? There's new releases of Word every probably quarter. I don't even know. They keep adding to it, right? They could have stopped in the early 90s. That would have been fine because I don't use any of those crazy features. But, you know, some people do. And so it attracts new audiences. And so you need to add features to your software to either get into new markets or to get into folks who couldn't buy you before because you didn't have this thing. And so there's always some sort of, you know, feature at least enhancements or adjacent markets to address. Or, you know, in our case, we did those acquisitions because there was software that really works for our clients and would integrate really well with us. And integration is one way to do it, but if you bring it in-house, you can do more. You know, so there's all those kinds of questions that you need to answer. So that's toward feature completeness. So I think about our software now. Is it complete? No, it's never quite complete. But is it 95% complete? Yeah, maybe. Up until something like AI comes along, and then you're like, well, on the one hand, you think, well, I need to add AI to my software because everyone else is doing it, right? That's not the right way to think. If you can't think of a good use for it, like just jamming it in there to check a box. I mean, I guess you can do that. But like the reason I came back is I was like, finally, I can do the things that I wanted to do because of AI, right? It was not like, oh, well, I want to go play with this thing. I'd been playing with this thing. It was like, okay, there was stuff that when I left incomplete and I left a roadmap for the team. And it was hard. It would have been hard to execute on. With AI, automation, all the tools that we use AWS has around data warehousing, like data warehousing, automation, analytics, and AI suddenly seem to me like now they're awesome. Like they were always good. Now they're awesome. And because of that, we can change our product completely. So that's one answer to your question. Another part is like, how do you do that? Right. Cause like I said, we have we're mostly out of Cold Fusion, but we still have some ASP.NET or ASP. We do have a lot of ASP.NET, a lot of ASP Classic even. We're changing React over time. So, you know, we're taking a sort of tech debt remediation approach on some of those things, right? Oh, we got to open this up. Let's just rewrite it in React or something like that. But in the case of all this new tech, we're actually building it in a kind of, it's not a new product because it's really just supporting all the existing products. But it's a whole new development environment, and we're calling it Nexus. It's sort of in the middle of everything. And then we're doing what I call minimally invasive surgery on all the production products. So you mentioned how hard it is to do. It's hard to do because you have thousands of clients using this thing all the time, and you can't break it, exactly. Right? And so, you know, something that seems trivial, why can't you just change this page to move this button here and there? It's like, well, because if we do that, you know, we've got to make all these plans and we've got to do all this testing and all this regression testing. It starts to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So this new tech we're building in the middle where it doesn't affect anything until it does. And then once we sort of get it ready, we're building, you know, calls into it or things like that. So we have, you know, most of these systems were originally developed, like I said, in the late 90s, early 2000s, and they're client-server architectures. They're SaaS, right? They're hosted in the cloud. All of our stuff, except one, is in AWS, and that won't be there in a few months. So, you know, it's all SaaS-based business model. It's all cloud-based, you know, compute. It's all, you know, hosted. There's no on-prem, never was. So at least we have that going for us, because that's the hard stuff, to move from on-prem to the cloud. But we've done that, or we didn't have that problem. But now it really is, you know, this sort of upgrading of the tech and placing parts in a big way. And so we're doing that through moving from client server to much more of a microservice architecture. So HireLogic's main product, the community product, was always designed that way, thankfully. But some of the older ones, you know, where it's doing, say, sending emails when a user pushes a button, it's got to queue that and do it, you know, in near real time, but through a microservice, so we can scale up, scale down. You have all kinds of problems with, you know, scaling when you've used these older architectures. So we've got, you know, two of the companies we acquired are using SQL Server Enterprise, which just gets bigger and more ornery as you get millions and billions of rows. And so, you know, the new stuff is all like Postgres, right? And it's so much faster and easier and cheaper and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Or it's even in Aurora, the hosted versions of it from Amazon. So you don't have to maintain or worry about licenses or worry about upgrades or worry about, you know, all that sort of stuff. So I think the key thing, I'm rambling a bit, but the key thing is, you know, you don't have to replace everything. You should replace, you know, places where you can, right? Like look to, okay, we could break that out into a service. It doesn't have to be real time. I think probably the biggest thing I realized, and this kind of came when I came back, was, hey, some things have to happen immediately. Most things don't. Like sending an email doesn't, right? And so a lot of the integrations we had planned between our systems, we realized, well, we're building a data warehouse. It goes to the data warehouse every 15 minutes, let's say. If instead of going from system A to system B, we go from system A to the data warehouse, system B to the data warehouse, and then the data warehouse back to A and B, if you can take a half hour delay, that's a way better way to do it than real-time integration, which just has all kinds of problems. So it's a lot. I mean, I'm getting pretty deep in technology and I guess I'm rambling.
Sure.
But yeah, it's you have to think differently. I think my 5 years away made me give up on all the stuff that I had, you know, in my head when I left and coming back almost fresh, but with still all the knowledge. It was super useful in thinking differently about everything, basically.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And what I understand from what you say is that innovation has to be for not just for the sake of innovation, but has to be for a good reason.
Yep.
And if, you know, that brings some benefits to customers and product, you have to do it. And if it doesn't really bring that kind of benefit, just doing it for the sake of innovation, probably that's not the right way to look at it.
Yep, exactly. It annoys them if you do it just for the sake of innovation, because things change for no reason.
Yeah.
At the same time, 5 years later, they're like, why does this look old? You have to stand up.
Yeah. And as you said, you know, you look at the product from maintainability point of view, that when it's more maintainable, it's easier to maintain at lower cost. You can do more with less resources for the customers. That benefits them in a way. So you look at it and say, this is really how we are going to really make it more maintainable, more consistent, more performant, and makes perfect sense in that regard. And then you define initiatives and then you go and just in that order do it. That is really the right way to do it. I have seen different patterns in my industry, analytic industry, some companies, some founders, some CEOs, essentially even initiated a new product, a brand new product, and they worked on it for 5 years, 10 years, then brought that to market. The problem was that was not backward compatible with the with the previous product. So customers looked at it more like a new company, new product, brand new. And some of them migrated to the new product. Some of them didn't. Some of them even decided to move out and go with another company at that point. But they could not bind themselves to the legacy system, so they could really think very fresh and bring the best experience they had in mind to their customers. But from business side, it turned out to be a challenge, because building that as a separate team within the company, just internal problems, and then externally with customers to persuade them. Now, there were another type of companies. They said, we are going to incrementally upgrade the current products. And as you said, that's a challenging challenge as well, because now you have all of these legacy and current customers. You need to stay support them and stay, you know, to, you know, it's not super easy to make a decision and change it. You have to be very careful. And there are some limitations there. And there were some people that they essentially, they just brand new, started a brand new company. Just the company is doing what it does, and they left. And you see, for example, in my case, you know, I left Logi and I started Curve. In Looker case, the guys, you know, left Looker, and Looker was sold to Google, and they started a new company of their own. And that's the other way, that you start from scratch. Now you have to build everything from scratch. You build the customer base, you build the product, you know, so that's totally also a different route. And each one has a totally different experience, pros and cons. There is no perfect kind of scenario.
Yeah, it is definitely challenging. I think we went through twice so far at our Logic where we just did a wholesale change of the user experience, right? So it was like the same technology underlying, but we sort of moved clients one at a time. And it wasn't like, to your point, if you have a new system you gotta migrate to, that's tough, because I would not recommend that. You can avoid it, because it does make clients say, well, if I'm gonna have to do a whole move thing, maybe I should look at what else is out there, right? So you lose a lot of customers. In our case, we kept the same database, we kept the same actual code, the same user experience in terms of what it does, but we went from, you know, like a YUI interface, which is a very old Yahoo based way of doing user experience, to what's called Bootstrap, back, I don't know, 2014 maybe, and now we've just done it again to more of a material design React style. And so clients move over a period of a year. We just put a team on it and say, we're moving you here. And it really is just like, here's a new look and feel. It's not actually changed the back end, right? It's a new look and feel, but your members are going to have, your customers have to get used to it. You might have to train some of your materials. You might have to give up, you know, custom design you've built, whatever. And so it's not a overnight thing, but yeah, you got to do it. And if you don't do it, it stagnates. And most people, especially founders, don't think, oh, 25 years from now, what's this going to look like? They're not thinking 25 years. I'm just thinking, I got to make payroll on Friday, right? And I thought that way too, but it's been, I don't know, what is that? I got to do the math, 17 years now that we've been doing this. And suddenly you look back, it's like, wow, yeah, we've had a lot of these big change challenges over 17 years. You just got to do it.
Yeah. And then you mentioned AI. I would say, you know, with regard to AI, that and Gen AI in particular, most people really think about Gen AI very positively at this point, because they have seen it in action. Like, so the fact that they can really just, for example, take a note from the meeting using AI rather than writing it down, and the note is meaningfully done right. Or for example, they can use it with regard to content generation, even outline the blog post and then write it, you know, finish it themselves. Or there are many other use cases that we are using every day, and people feel very positively about it. What is your kind of take pragmatically out of Gen AI, and I'm not really asking about some demo assets that people can create, because there are enough demo assets out there. I'm talking about really product grade kind of use cases that really this Gen AI can be productized in a way that meaningfully can generate revenue and bring value to customers and users.
Yep. Yeah, well, I think our biggest one and what really got me back, right? This is my thing I really wanted to do. So we acquired, in 2017, we acquired two market automation companies that did, you know, the same HubSpot style market automation, but focused on the association market. So associations are like groups of doctors, lawyers, accountants, neuroscientists, ski instructors, you know, it runs a gamut, pipe layers. It's like everything, right? So the thought was, you know, they're using this market automation software the same way that you or I would use HubSpot. And what that means is they're doing the same, you know, sort of marketing campaigns all the time. And what's interesting is associations, even though there's, you know, tens of thousands of them, they are sort of the same business, right? They have members. They want their members to come to their events. They want them to take courses. They want to be educated or certified or whatever. There's a series of things, and not every association does all of them. But they all sort of fit in a mold, as opposed to, you know, in corporate business, you don't tend to have a bunch of companies doing the exact same thing. You know, you have five or six, but this is tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands doing the same thing, right? And so our thought was, hey, we could just like pre-build these marketing campaigns for them because they're all doing the same campaign every year. Like if I have an annual conference and I'm writing a campaign to get people to go there, and so is the guy next to me, so is the guy next to him, right? It goes on forever and there's thousands of people writing essentially the same campaign to get people to come to the annual conference. So we said, all right, let's acquire these two companies. Let's pre-build these campaigns and give them to them. So not only do they have marketing automation software, but they've got the campaigns built, and we could get some, you know, I say Madison Avenue just because I'm a, you know, fan of that TV show Mad Men. We'll get some Madison Avenue folks to write the best campaign in the world, and we give it to 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 associations. Now they've got better results, right? So that was the idea. Well, we got into it, and we did some of the work on it, and we got some templating and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's tough to send the same message to members of the Society for Neuroscience, which are neuroscientists, and the ski and snowboard instructors, right? You know, they just talk differently. They think differently. And so I said, well, that's fine. We'll do it Mad Libs style. If everybody remembers Mad Libs, right? We'll make the things, we'll fill in the blanks, and we'll change, you know, this and that. And so it ended up, well, yeah, that's kind of good, but now it's not necessarily a lot better than the ones they create. And you've got to have, you know, 10 different reading levels. You need to have 10 different tones of voice, right? All this kind of stuff. And so you multiply that Cartesian product style, you end up being, you know, this one simple campaign that has 20 steps. Suddenly, you know, there's 100 versions of it. And I'm like, that's tough to do, right? So what's awesome with AI is we can do this Madison Avenue style. Let's make a great campaign to get people to do this. And then have that as sort of our model. And then when the ski and snowboard instructors come, we can just say, rewrite this in like a ninth grade reading level in a very casual tone. And the AI can do that really well. And then we'll say, rewrite this in a very, you know, in a 14th grade reading level in a very scientific tone. And it will do that. And it's also opened up to say, and then rewrite that in French, Spanish, and Portuguese or whatever, right? And it will do that. And so suddenly my one model campaign, which would have had 100 permutations, can have just the one, and the AI will just create those permutations. It does it really well. So that's an area that I thought was amazingly good, right? Like that's a use case where it's not generating something out of nothing. So it's not going to go too far off the rails, right? And hallucinate like crazy. It's just like change this wording to make it easier to read or make it, you know, more scientific-y or more professional or more whatever. You know, when I really got struck by how difficult it was going to be, I thought HireLogic's tone was casual. And then the actual tone that the marketing people put in the marketing thing is like 15 words long. Casual, but approachable. Smart, but fun. You know, it's like this whole long thing. And I was like, well, I can't write that. But like you tell an AI, it does a great job, right? So that's a good example of where you know, it's an actual function that makes a massive improvement to our industry. And it's not a gimmick, right? It's not just, I'm going to throw AI in there to check a box. It's like, this is going to make a difference. And so we have 5 or 6 of those things where it's like, wow, suddenly we can do something that was undoable. And it's now almost trivial to do technically, and the results are amazing. Mm-hmm. So that's where you should think about using AI, not just, I need to get some, you know, click a button and it brings up an assistant and I want to write something and it'll help me write it. Like, that's cool. And we have that too, but that's a little gimmicky compared to some of the stuff you can do if you think about sort of what your product actually does for people. Less about the user interface, more about sort of what's going on in the back end and how AI can fix that. And that's scratching the surface. There's all kinds of chain of thought type stuff you can do. There's all kinds of, you know, workflow stuff you can do. Have AI, you know, create stuff on the fly that it's really good at depending on the AI you choose. So yeah, it's amazing. It's just it's amazing how well it works.
Fantastic. I have so many other questions to ask. Especially one area would be lessons learned from acquisition, advising other founders when they are considering acquisitions, you know, but we will leave it for another time, whenever sure. You had time, maybe for episode 2 of this conversation. At this point, I would like to ask you if you have any book in mind to suggest that you thought it was really a good book, either personally or professionally, that you liked it very much, or maybe a blog post or anything that you thought, you know, it is worth sharing, or even event that you may say founders should consider going, SaaS founders to this, or SaaS CEOs, SaaS leaders go to this kind of particular events. We appreciate that if you can share with us.
Yeah. I don't read a ton of business books. I mostly network for that kind of information. People tell me, oh, this is awesome, and then I go, whatever it is. Sure. I will say, if I can choose a movie, I made my whole company watching the movie Her, because that is kind of the future of where it's where we are ish, right? Like, Apple just released this, you know, Apple Intelligence thing, or it's going to be released shortly. I guess they announced it the other day. And it's getting much more like Siri is getting much more like Her. I have to call her Samantha when I talk about it, because I've got Siri listening over here and I've got the A1 listening over here. And if I say their names, then they interrupt me. But yeah, that I would say, if you do anything, watch Her, and it's a good movie. Anyway, watch it with you know, significant other. It's kind of romantical. But it is a very near glimpse at the future. So I love that. But I mostly read and watch sci-fi type stuff, and that's prepared me pretty well, I think, for some technologies that are coming. Good and bad.
Both my wife and I loved it, the movie Hair. It's just, you know, very much, especially at the time that it came, you know, it was very eye-opening, and for many people that's where we are heading. And now with OpenAI, it's even more reality and getting close to the point that is believable.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much, Rob, for joining us. As always, a pleasure speaking with you.
Absolutely. Good to see you again. Take care.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armon Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.